Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron. And we're just getting everything set up here for our late start. We'll have Tony the Tornado on the line in a minute here, and then we're going to get Tom Vecic. He's probably waiting in the wings. Got a little problem here with the internet. I got to deal with to get him connected. But let's get Tony on the line. Hey, there he is. All right, so we just got to get Tom on the line here in a minute. But while we're waiting, I guess we should give a mention of the... they scored the WBO did their scoring of the Pacquiao fight with Bradley. And it looks like they got it right. Lo and behold.
What?
They scored. They rescored the Pacquiao Bradley fight, and the WBO scored it for Pacquiao. So they're asking for the match.
Obviously, they got it right.
I still don't know what they're going to do about it. But this week, actually, a nice friend of boxing, John McCain, the senator there, and of course Harry Reid, who's from Nevada. He's the Senate Majority Leader out there in Nevada. And they both got together and decided to do some legislation, or at least introduce it. I don't know if they're going to get it passed. But they want to create a National Boxing Commission. But I don't know if that's going to solve everything. And I haven't seen anything in that in the reports on that to indicate that any future decision like that would have a recourse to overturn this national, you know, commission. And interestingly enough, I did read an article from a guy named Faye Vincent, who, if you're a baseball fan, you might recognize because he used to be a commissioner of baseball, who suggested that's not going to work and that it's just wasting taxpayer money to even be considering this at these times for America. Which I thought made a lot of sense. I mean, I'm glad to see them get involved, but I just don't think a national commission is really going to solve the problem. But I could be wrong. I mean, I really haven't read into it that much. I haven't seen the actual legislation that they've proposed. But we'll see. And then the other side of the coin here that we're going to talk about tonight is the mixed martial arts. The UFC actually had to offer a refund to all tickets buyers for UFC 147 recently. They gave fans 3 days to ask for their money back. And, of course, last week we talked about their low attendance at their last event, and now they're talking about having to refund everybody because of all the injuries that they're dealing with. And then the injuries keep coming. Well, it seems like combat sports in general lately is having a lot of problems. What can you do? But I'm trying to connect here to get Tom on. Did you get the chance to watch any boxing over the weekend? I know there were a few fights.
I saw some of the Eddie Chambers fight against Thomas Adamack, and it became Chambers hurt his left shoulder, his lead shoulder, early in the fight, and he pretty much fought. I mean, he won on for the last 2 thirds of the fight. I still thought he won. Adamek got the decision. It was kind of gross that Alan Ruby's team had it 11 rounds to 1. That was absolutely ridiculous. And then I saw the Chip Bayless match, and he was pretty good in stopping Andy Wade.
And one of your favorite guys was in the news recently. Hector Camacho. He's been blocked from seeing any of his kids now. So I guess his junior there is not going to be even able to use him as a coach anymore. It's probably better off for him. I forget what the story was, why he's in the legal troubles right now, because I think it had something to do with him messing around with some teenager and inappropriate contact. Broadway, have you heard that?
Excuse me?
Mike Tyson is going to Broadway.
Heard that. I heard he, you know, he's doing his comedy center or whatever it is. And...
You're coming in barely audible there, Tony.
That's what I heard. I know he's doing some comedy shows, and I heard he's doing some Broadway.
Right. We got Tom now?
Rich, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, we're in. All right, great. Yeah, I was able to hear you guys talking about the National Commission, and I feel just like you guys do that, you know, we got to do something, but is that the answer? It just seems like, first off, there'd be so much, you know, there's an old cliche, the devil's in the details. And first off, Congress is hard-pressed to get anything done. And so there'd be all these issues about the funding and the staffing and everything, and who are we going to have on the commission, and what kind of authority are they going to have? Yeah, it may be a bureaucratic nightmare. So I don't know. You know, Teddy Atlas has been on this kick for how long, you know? But I don't know. It's just very depressing.
Yeah, and I was also talking about how the UFC is also having some issues there with their UFC 147. They're actually refunding tickets. So it seems
I imagine the Fertitta brothers are probably not too happy about that one, are they?
I don't think their bottom line is going to be all that dented, though. There's two big UFC fights this week, and we have tomorrow UFC on FX and UFC 147 on Saturday, so there's a lot to talk about there. I'm not sure about the boxing schedule. We're obviously starting late, and we're a little bit behind on the planning this week, fortunately. I just got some water skiing, and that's why I was late. Had to take advantage of the nice hot weather up here in New England. But definitely a big weekend for MMA. UFC on FX4, the main event there is going to be Gray Maynard versus Clay Guida. Gray is 10-1-1. Of course, the one loss and the one draw are both against the same guy, Frankie Edgar. So there's definitely a tough guy there. Clay Guida has been around forever. It's always exciting, always amped up right when he gets into the cage and throughout the fight. His record is 29-12.
You know, I think it's going to be a very interesting test for Gray. We'll really see where he's at. And I may have mentioned to you that, you know, in the story I did last time I was in Las Vegas for Real MMA, and I got to meet Gray at the after-fight party and talk with him a bit about it. And, you know, as far as Guida, he's a cardio machine, and his head has to be made out of concrete, if you remember that head kick that Diego Sanchez landed against him. You remember that one a few years ago. I mean, I think that would have stopped a lot of guys, but Guida's just keeps coming. And Gray told me that his strategy is just going to be just use his athleticism and you know, match his conditioning and just use his technique and athleticism and beat him that way. So he's very confident. But so is Guida. I was watching his interview today. So it could be a very entertaining fight.
Clay Guida is just one of those guys that win or lose, you know, it seems like the UFC is just always going to keep him around just because he's entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, he just keeps coming, and he gives everything he's gotten. And I think it's going to see where Gray's at. And there was an interesting thread on the Underground about the mental state of both guys. And some folks were saying that Gray just seemed like the Edgar trilogy had really taken quite a bit out of him. But I don't see that, but we'll find out tomorrow.
I didn't read any articles about it, but I know I saw a headline about something to do with Gray Maynard had a challenge about Clay Guida's hair. but I didn't get into finding out what that was all about.
Yeah. Well, apparently he was concerned that, you know, if Guida's on top of you, that would be a mess trying to see your way through that, and he wants it pinned, so I don't know what they're going to do with but it may be a legitimate concern.
Right. The only last time I remember hair being an issue in a fight was Pauly Malignaggi.
Oh, we had the barber at, what was it, after the fourth round? I don't think I'd ever seen that before. We had a barber in there, right? His cornerman had to go to a haircutting school. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was a bad choice.
Hey, he didn't do a bad job considering he only had a minute to work with, you know. But I imagine Malignaggi had to get it styled a few days later. But yeah. And how about Saturday's card? What do you think about our main event there?
Well, Rich Franklin hasn't been around in a while, and Wanderlei Silva has been kind of on the shelf for a while, so this is kind of the old veterans facing each other. And, you know, it's one of those fights where it's legend versus legend, really. But Wanderlei Silva never really impressed me, you know, since he came over to the UFC. He was much better when he was in Pride. And really, the best fight recent memory that he had was against Chuck Liddell. So that should tell you something. But Rich Franklin's been out of the picture for a while, and he's going to be a little rusty. His last fight, I think he broke his arm. So
yeah,
it's definitely going to be the war.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of both guys forever. I mean, how could you not be? You know, both of them really have given so much. And I had the pleasure of meeting Franklin a few years ago at the back in December 2005 when him and Matt Hughes were on top of their game, and they were the guest referees at a card we had here in Cleveland. And spent about 5 minutes with Rich. We had a good talk. You know, really just a perfect gentleman. Can't help but like him. And I understand Vanderlei's very fan-friendly, too. I mean, these guys understand without the fans, what do we got? So I like both. The only issue is, where's the winner going here? You know, I mean, if we look at it from significance in the overall scheme of things, it's not that exciting. But if we can just sit back and enjoy the fight, so that's what I plan on doing. So we'll see what happens.
It's definitely one of those, you know, fights where, you know, the loser's probably going to retire. But the winner, we don't know. Rich Frank, I don't know. I think he's probably ready to retire. Either way, Wanderlei Silva, I don't know. He's seems like one of those guys that'll just fight until he can't fight anymore. But his record is 34-11 with one draw, and Franklin's 28-6. So Silva's got a few more fights under his belt. But I think Franklin has seen better competition in recent years, so I think I'd give the edge to him in that fight. But Silva, you never know. You know, it depends on what kind of shape he comes in. And I actually went to his gym when I was out in Vegas, and I tried to talk to a few people there about their Zion's situation, being the guy that exposed that whole story. And I'm not sure he is anymore. I think he actually quit Zion's. He had a beef with them himself, so I'm not sure if he's still going to be coming in with the Zion's label. But I met a couple people in his gym, and it seemed like he definitely runs a tight ship over there. And I think he's all set when he does retire with that stuff. He's got a lot of good things going on over there. A lot of people train over there, and he knows what he's doing with that. So he's got a business plan. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would agree with you though. He is the kind of guy that's just going to keep fighting forever. Well, it's Vanderlei, and you know, what's that cliche that a fighter's age is not measured chronologically, but it's what they've been through, and I think at this point he has to be getting toward the end of things, but we'll see.
We all said that probably wait for what happens with Chael Sonnen, because I think he hates Chael Sonnen enough he might want to fight him next. War with him. Also on that card, we got Cesar Ferreira, who's 4-2, fighting Sergio Moraes. Never heard of either guy. They got, there's a guy I recognize the name, Fabricio Verdun's on the card. He's 15 5-1, fighting Mike Russo, who's 15-1. It should be an interesting battle there.
Yeah, it certainly should be. That's you know, Mike Russo reminds me of that stereo, that cliche that this isn't a bodybuilding competition. You know, he's not the most ripped guy, but it seems like every time I think he's not going to do it, he does it. So I wouldn't count him out. I mean, my money has to be on Verdum, but, you know, you look at what Russo pulled off against Todd Duffy, an amazing comeback.
Mm-hmm. Also, a couple other guys I never heard of, Roni Mariano Bezerra, who's 10-3, fighting Godofredo Castro, who's 8-0. And I guess there are a lot of injuries. These guys are, like, top in the card, and I never heard of them. So I guess it's opening the doors for a couple other guys to make a name for themselves here. But, there's a couple other good fights here, guys with a lot of fights under their belt. Lori Alcantara, who's 28-3, fighting Hakran Diaz, who's 20-1, with one draw. And I haven't seen either of these guys fight, but judging from their records, they've been around. We got Rodrigo Dan, who's 9-5, fighting Anastasio Medeiros de Figueiredo. That's the name. 15-7 is his record. Francisco Drinaldo, who's 10-1, fighting Delson Heleno, 23-6. And maybe that's why UFC is offering a refund. It's probably fans have never heard of some of these names that they've put on here. But we also have John Teixeira Conceição, who's 13-0-1, fighting Hugo Viana, who's 5-0. And three more here. We got Leonardo Mafra Teixeira, 5-0, fighting Thiago de Oliveira Perpetuo, 8-1-1. And then Wagner Campos, 11-3, fighting Marcos Vinicius Borges Pancini. Oh, the guy's in long names on this card. He's 19-3-1. And then finally we have Milton Vieira, who's 13-7-1, fighting Felipe Arantes. And that rounds it out for UFC 147. It almost seems to me, I mean, I haven't looked at the full card here until now, but it almost seems to me like UFC on FX is going to have a lot bigger, more recognizable names here on the free card.
Well, maybe some of those guys are pretty big names in Brazil. So,
that's the schedule is putting a lot of those guys from the Tough Brazil card.
Yeah. So maybe they'll have a good live sellout crowd there. You know, the Brazilians are pretty passionate about this stuff. So,
I'd say. But we have a nice card on UFC on FX 4. Sam Stout is one of the best boxers in the MMA that I've seen around. He's a co-main event, 17-7-1 is his record. He's fighting Spencer Fisher, who actually I got to see at the UFC event, UFC 78. He lost his fight there, but so I'm actually there. He's been around for a while. He's 24-8. Yeah, always entertaining. We got Brian Ebersole, who I first saw in an Australian event. And I saw him actually pull off a move I haven't seen since. I don't know whether it's illegal in the UFC or whether he just changed his style, but came out in that first fight I saw him in, and he started punching his opponent in the thighs, like a Charlie horse move. And I never seen him or anyone else do it again, but he's been impressive since he got into the UFC. Put some wars in, and he's got a hell of a record. He's 49-14-1. So he's looking for his big 50th win against TJ Waldberger, who's 15-6. Then we got a Brit there, Ross Pearson, who's 13-5, fighting Cub Swanson, who's 16-5. And first time I saw Cub Swanson fight, he got KTFO'd against Jose Aldo in about 17 seconds. And the fight that gets me, I never want to do MMA. Because he came right out of the corner and just did a flying knee, hit him in the face. Cub Swanson went down, and that was all she wrote. Aldo just kind of pounced on him, punched him five times in the face before the ref could even get in and stop it. And That was it. We also have Hatsu Hayoki, Japanese guy there, 26-4-2, fighting Ricardo Lamas, who's 11-2. One of the Ultimate Fighter finalists from past seasons, Ramsey Nguyen, who's 5-2, fighting CJ Keith, who's 8-0. We got Rick Story, 13-5, fighting Brock Jardine, who's 9-1. And Joey Gambino, sounds Italian, 9-0. Fighting Steven Seiler, 20-9. We got Chris Camozzi, 16-5, fighting Nick Catone, who's 9-2. Matt Brown back in action, he's 14-11, fighting Luis Ramos, who's 19-7. And two more here, we got Dan Miller, 13-6. Fighting Ricardo Funch, who's 8-3, and Ken Stone, 10-3, fighting Dustin Pig, who's 11-5. And that's two main UFC fights coming up this weekend. Really not sure what else is going on in MMA or boxing, but I know we had a couple good fights over the weekend in boxing. And what I wanted to do, I don't know if we're going to get any callers, but if anybody wants to call in the second half hour here, we got a guest call-in number. It's 347-324-3228. And if you want to talk about anything to do with MMA or boxing, seems like kind of the theme of the two sports these days is seems like there's a lot of controversy. And the UFC, I know I talked about last week that the injury bug is starting to make waves. And Dana White has talked about how he feels like these guys should lay off or ease up in training. And I've also heard the theory that maybe it might have something to do with the health insurance now. Because before, when they didn't have health insurance, these guys would just tough it out because they needed the paycheck. And they'd fight through the injuries so that after the fight, then they could deal with it and pay for the healing process. And now there's no qualms about pulling out of the fight because you got the health insurance. And that just pays for whatever injury you're going to deal with. It kind of makes sense. But I don't know if that's the only thing. And then, of course, the other aspect of it is the performance-enhancing drugs part of it. Because the one theory that I've heard more than any other out there is that these guys are relying on the testosterone replacement therapy and other stuff, steroids, because they're injured. So it helps them get back quicker. So I don't know if that's really as much as a factor as I've heard, but makes sense. Anybody wants to weigh in? That's the number 347-324-3228.
Performance-enhancing drugs. I was joking around with one of my my colleagues at work, a player for the Phillies. You know, and just by chance, he made this unbelievable catch. He's actually been playing in place exactly. He's been out so far. Makes an unbelievable catch in a game and actually fractured a vertebrae in his spine doing it. So he's in a brace for like the next so many weeks. From that outfit, he was he had a trace of some performance enhancing drug in his system. He's suspended for 50 games, and actually suspension he's going to be serving while in the DL. So it's really like a wash. So my colleague texts me and he's like, performance enhancing drugs. He must be the only 200 hitter in the history of Major League Baseball that is on PEDs. I said, yeah, but I said, that's got to make up for his defense. I mean, his defense is unbelievable. I mean, he just didn't get over to his hitting yet. I was asked about it, and then I said, my favorite was a couple of years ago, Fernando Vargas. I said, fight De La Hoya, get beat, and then get busted and suspended for performance-enhancing drugs. Make that bad.
Now. like Tony hung up. Can you hear me, Tom? Call network error. It's weird. Tom, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Tony's giving me the phone network error. Must be on his end for once. There you go. You're back. Tony.
Yeah, you can hear me.
Yeah, you're back.
I said I never left.
Difficulties for once instead of me.
I don't know. Maybe it was me. I'm not sure. But did you hear my story of Fernando Vargas?
You were starting to get into it, and then you cut out.
Well, I was saying, we were talking about the only 200 hitter in Major League Baseball to have, be performing to Hampton Jones. I'm like, well, it's no worse than Fernando Vargas back in the day. But he fights De La Hoya. He gets knocked out. And then he gets suspended for performance-enhancing drugs. I'm like, well, yeah, they really help.
Actually, it's kind of starting to spread over to boxing, too, because,
Remember when James Tony got caught on performance-enhancing drugs? Do I look like a guy that's on steroids?
But recently, we had Lamont Peterson tested positive, and there was another guy I just read about this week, a British guy. He got a 4-year ban for dope.
Wow.
And he admitted to doing all kinds of steroids. Anyway, 13
Not just steroids. You know what else is especially prevalent that I've noticed in boxing? Not just boxing, but in other sports too, but I think it is more advantageous to a sport like boxing. And sports like baseball, football, whatever, they're strict on, products that, can increase strength, can increase, endurance, and shit like that. But especially in boxing, I've seen guys that have gotten in a lot of trouble for having, metabolic products in their system, like metabolites and shit like that. Because, yeah, I'm sure that can help in sports like baseball, football, whatever. But I really don't see how much. Does it enhance your performance? It helps you cope. It helps you weight. I guess in a way it does. But in boxing, I can really see that being prevalent because guys have to make weight. If that can help a guy who's, maybe fighting middleweight, cut down the junior middleweight or welterweight, that could be a big advantage for him or disadvantage for his opponent. I've known guys personally that said, they were in a training regimen and whatever, and one of the personal trainers gave them something that had traces of metabolite or whatever it is in it. I don't know exactly how true that they didn't know about it is. But boxing and, in a way, mixed martial arts and even Olympic-style wrestling, amateur-style wrestling, those are very weight-based category sports. Where having a metabolism enhancing, performance enhancing drug would be a major advantage.
Yeah, I remember too. The big stories about the WWE and steroids came out, and it became a story that those guys were actually kind of encouraged. There was no major testing program or anything. Obviously it's all fake, so it's not like, any outcomes are affected by that. But still, the guys are destroying their bodies with this stuff. But this British heavyweight boxer, Larry Olabamiwo, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but he was suspended for 4 years after admitting to using more than a dozen doping substances. And the UK anti-doping agency said he tested positive for the blood-boosting drug EPO on January 30th, following a bout with countryman Sam Sexton, and he later admitted to using 13 banned substances, including human growth hormone and anabolic steroids, over a six-year period. And he was only 10-3, but he's banned from participation in all sports now until February 20th, 2016, and all his boxing results dating back to January 1st, 2006 have been annulled.
Ooh.
Never heard of but I guess that's what you get for admitting that you've been doing drugs for 6 years. But they basically investigated him based on intelligence they got from a 2007 U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration probe into drug trafficking. So,
How old is he, Rich? Do you know?
It doesn't say here.
But, I mean, four years, I mean, if he's in his prime, 4 years is, that's going to be awful hard.
If he's had to rely on 13 different substances over 6 years, I don't know if he's going to be able to do it without the stuff.
Yeah, very good point. So
maybe not. Maybe it's kind of a blessing in disguise. He's going to have to find something else to do for a while. But another story, of course, with the Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley aftermath. Bob Arum, of course, came out and said that this is the death knell for boxing. Well, obviously it's not for him because he's already gone and put together another big blockbuster card within days, I guess, of saying.
I also read where, and I don't know if Bradley was misquoted, but something to the effect that he would be willing to relinquish the belt for a rematch. I don't know if you'd heard
was
of
that. Was it a Facebook status?
The what?
Was it a Facebook status where that was posted on? Did he say he was going to give the belt?
No, it was...
that was...
And I'm trying to think, because, you know, a lot of times if I get on Max Boxing or on the Underground, there'll be these links, you know, and then pretty soon I'm off in the Twilight Zone, just don't remember where I've seen that, but it'd be interesting to see if he's really willing to do that, because up until now he's never admitted that he lost the fight. Remember, he was saying in his mind he won, so... This is interesting if this is the case.
Right. Yeah, actually, the only thing that I've heard from Bradley recently is that he actually doesn't think there will be a rematch, which is interesting because he is convinced now that the whole reason Arum stopped put the brakes on a rematch was because he really wants Manny to fight Marquez again, number four, on that date of November 10th. And maybe I'm thinking maybe that he might have promised Marquez that fight already. So maybe that's why he's saying that. But, you know, with the controversy over this, I think there's plenty of room to say, well, promise or not, we have to do this rematch before we give you that fight. Especially because there's a belt on the line. And the WBO just came out and they said that they had their scores, look at the fight, and they're recommending a rematch. Which, you know, it's obviously probably the right thing to do under the circumstances, but it's really a shame that there's no appeals process for a bad decision. And immediately the Nevada State Athletic Commission just throws up their hands and says, we're not doing anything about it. And even though Bob Arum supposedly called for an investigation by the Nevada Attorney General, I haven't heard anything about it, anything being initiated there. And it's just like, all right, you know, everybody's up in arms, let's do this, let's do that. Well, how do you rectify the actual bad decision?
Well, and I think it's a nice smokescreen. You know, Arum can tell this out and act all concerned, but knowing that nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. Let's take a second there, Tom.
Well, Rich, you know what I'm looking at doing, and I can really use both of you guys' help on this. Hopefully, I can get some, a little bit of spare time to get this done. You guys can send me some examples of some of the worst decisions that have ever been out there. I'm talking about, the Whitaker Chavez. I'm talking. Actually, I think is a worse decision for Paranel Whitaker than his fight with Julio Cesar Chavez, because his first fight with Jose Luis Ramirez, it was his first title shot, and he pretty much swept every round and lost in a split decision. That was pretty atrocious. I remember a fight, it was one of the last 15-round title fights. This a guy from the Philadelphia area, but closer more to like the Lancaster area, Reading area, in a town called Coatesville, about a name of Calvin Sexy-Smooth Grove. And he fought one of the last 15-round title fights against Jorge Paez. And it was a 15-round fight down in Mexico, and Grove was winning up until the last round. There's no three knockdown rule. Paez was able to knock Grove down three times. Grove gets up and makes his decision. I think one of the judges scored the 15th round 10-4 for Paez, which was enough to give him the win. I'm looking at fights. I know the first Joe Lewis, Jersey Joe Walker fight had a bad decision. I just want to get, about maybe 10 or 12 of them. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch each one of them, and then come up with pretty much a series of pieces. And it's hard because, fights are going to end, unjustly. Yeah, it's going to be hard. But I really want to sit down, I want to rank where I think this one, goes in some of the all-time worst. And we'll see what this little pea brain computes.
Well, I haven't watched a fight in forever, but a lot of people argue that Sugar Ray Leonard versus Marvin Hagler was a robbery.
I remember last week I spoke about that. One of the things I said about Leonard Hagler is the problem that happened with Hagler in that fight is Hagler gave up the first four rounds. So in a 12-round fight, you're already down 4-0 with 8 rounds to go. Now, I thought Hagler won 7 of the final 8 rounds to win that decision. So when you figure you're down 4-0, and the one thing I said is, if you ever watch a lot of hockey games, you have a hockey fight, two guys square off, and it's the whole fight. You say, boy, seeing guys laying it back and forth, but I think so-and-so, kicked his ass in that fight. It's one fight. In boxing, you're scoring by round. So if you scored, and I think for last week, a continuous one 36-minute round between Leonard and Hagler, you're going to come out there and say, man, yeah, Hagler landed the better, harder, more effective punch if he kicked Leonard's ass. But the problem is that already by giving up 4 of those rounds, you're in such a hole that all Leonard has to do is win 3 more rounds. 3 of the final 8 rounds, he wins that fight. The other example I said last week was Oscar De La Hoya Floyd Mayweather. Well, I know a lot of people emailed me after that, but De La Hoya kicked his ass. He got robbed. I'm like, no, he didn't. I said, if you go back and watch that fight, a couple of one of the early rounds is really close. Neither guy did much. Mayweather did slightly a bit more. He wins that round 10-9. Then there was another round with De La Hoya did really good and backed Mayweather up. He hit him with some hard shots. And you could put De La Hoya kicked his ass that round. De La Hoya wins that round 10-9. So you're even right there. In the whole of the two rounds, De La Hoya did more work, but the fact is they're still even. And I remember the guy called him, De La Hoya kicked his ass. I'm like, yeah, in 5 of the 12 rounds. Mayweather still won 7 of the 12. He wins the fight. We're not just lumping a 136-minute round. We are doing 12 three-minute rounds. Yeah, there's a flaw to that system to do that. There's a flaw to every system. Or worse than that horrible computerized scoring in the Olympics. If they adopted that in the pro box, probably barf.
Yeah, that's one of those tough ones. I mean, I don't remember any particular controversy swirling around that fight, but there was actually a lot of controversy surrounding the Manny Pacquiao-Marquez fight the last time around.
Absolutely.
and even watching it the first time myself, I thought it was closer than it was. But then I watched it again from a different camera angle because I was watching it on free stream online the first time, and it was the British guy's feed. And then I watched the HBO, and it was from a completely different angle. And I said, that wasn't even close. But I could understand watching it the first time how people would have thought differently. And actually, a lot of people this time around after Pacquiao got the loss were saying, well, that's payback for Marquez. Because they still think he lost that fight. But at least I watched it again and determined that maybe it was just the angle or just the way that Marquez was fighting early on looked much better.
Another point that I actually attended a couple of years ago. Actually more than a couple, about 9 years ago. Kind of split up the spectrum. Bernard Hopkins was defending the middleweight title. He was the middleweight champ back then. He was fighting a completely overmatched fighter by the name of Miraj Akar. It was a horrible fight. Akar was in the ring, and then Hopkins was an eight-round beatdown on him. Couldn't stop him in two, but he punished him for eight. Okay, that was a mismatch. I don't think Akar won 5 seconds of that fight. But there was a fight on the undercard. It was actually a rematch between David Tua and Haseem Rahman. And I was at the fight with a friend of mine. It was the second fight that he ever went to. The other one being a Hopkins title fight. So we're at this fight. We're sitting in the lower level of the spectrum. And we worked together at the time. So I'm like, okay, Monday, we're going to bet on this fight. You and I are going to bet a quick bar on it. So we bet the quick bar. And we're watching the fight. And after the fight was over, I picked Tua. He picked Rockman, by the way. After the fight was over, he looked at me and he goes, I guess I'll be owing you a quick on Monday. I said, all right, Tua kicked his ass. But then it goes in the cards, one joke for Tua. But one joke for Rockman, 8-4. I'm like, are you kidding me? Someone gave Rockman 8 rounds in that fight. I thought he barely won 3. The next judge, Tua 8 rounds before. I'm like, yeah, that's the right way. So judge even, 114, 114. I said, you got to be shitting me. Tua kicked his ass. So the next day I'm home, and I wanted to watch the card again. So we're watching it, and I'm watching the Tua-Rockman fight. And the announcers are all praising Rockman for everything he is. Oh, Rockman. Well, what Rockman was doing, he was throwing a lot of jabs, but they were little, and like they were on the inside. So you didn't see a whole lot of them. And, yeah, some of them landed. I mean, see, what was happening is Rockman was landing these little punches on the inside that you really couldn't see. When Tua was landing punches, you could see him from the cheap seats of the spectrum, and you could hear him from the cheap seats of the spectrum, even if they were only landing his arm and his thigh and his glove. He just threw a hit so goddamn hard. So the HBO announcers had Rockman running 8 rounds before. So my friend and I, we looked at each other after the draw, and we were at work on Monday. I bought a Twix and gave it to him. He bought a Twix and gave it to me, and we called it the draw. But that's the difference of watching the fight live and watching the fight, you know, with an announcer's bias. Because the announcers and Harold Letterman all had Rockman clearly winning that fight, and everybody in the audience, I mean, booed the decision, and I was walking out of there, and there were people that went in there as Rockman fans. And I remember there was one black guy, I was walking out of there, and he was a big Rockman fan, and he just, he got his ass kicked. He got his ass kicked.
Well, in the Bradley fight, they actually had 5 judges score it from the WBO. They called them international judges. And the panel actually all ruled that it was a win for Pacquiao. But Bob Arum still says he wants an investigation. That's kind of the weird part because, I mean, one of the major suspects, obviously him, if this fight was fixed. And I know I was one of the first ones calling for his head in my articles about it, but he's saying, I told them they need to interrogate me. They need to interrogate Todd DeBoof, the top-ranked president, and all the people in my office. They have to ask hard questions. So it sounds to me like he really is screaming from the rooftops that he's innocent and that he wants them to, go through his office and find that out. So that turns into a situation where the most likely scenario is one of two things. Either the judges were just stupid or they were bribed. And, you know, much has been made about their age being over 70, and that's retirement age, of course, so they're probably not making all that much money these days. And it makes sense if they were bribed. But,
Is there anyone who, besides those two judges, who agrees with their verdict? Have you guys heard of anyone that agrees with that?
I have heard some people in the press, and Max Kellerman was actually saying, he didn't reveal who it was, but he was saying after the fight that one of his friends had it scored for Bradley. But, you know, it's still, it was a minority. And I know that there was a story that they polled a bunch of writers, and it was like 90% of the writers had it scored for Pacquiao. So,
yeah,
it was definitely some people, you know, agreed that Bradley won, but not to the extent that it was close at all or like that, like the way they scored it. But it's definitely going to be something that it's going to be interesting to see how they set up the rematch, if they do the rematch, which I think they kind of have to do, but we'll see. But Bob Arum is standing to his guns, or sticking to his guns there, and saying that this investigation has to be done before he does anything. But he's saying, obviously, he's the boss, Pacquiao. He's the fighter, and to the extent possible, I'll do what he says. Otherwise, I wouldn't have his loyalty. I have to talk to him, though, and make certain he understands all the ramifications, and if he's aware of what the public's perception is. I would have to have, if I were going to do a rematch, an investigation, which is ongoing with the Attorney General's office, to clarify the situation. So I guess they are doing an investigation. But we'll see what happens out of it. If it was simply the incompetence of the judges, Arum says, and a simple mistake, period, which is what you and I suspect, and they determine there is no wrongdoing, that's easy to remedy. All we have to do is a rematch with different judges. Absent that, given all the suspicion, no matter how unwarranted it would be to do a rematch, unwarranted, it would be hard to do a rematch. Half of these websites are saying that the promoter is the one who did this and that I talked to these judges. I had nothing whatsoever to do with picking them and never talked to them. And he's admitting that if he doesn't do a rematch for Pacquiao, he's going to instead pair him with Marquez again. And, of course, he said he's also open to Floyd Mayweather on November 10th, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Not at all. Actually, you know who's really gunning for Floyd Mayweather right now is, darn a blank, shouldn't have said that. Robert Guerrero, who's actually took a little break to deal with his wife's cancer. And he's been winning every fight since he came back, and looking good. And he's been calling out Mayweather for months and months and months, and he actually thinks he's getting close to signing that deal. So I think we might see that fight before we see a Pacquiao fight. But I think all the hype is gone. I mean, I do, like I said, I think that the press just jumped the gun by saying that fight would never happen, just because of the Pacquiao loss. But I do think that it definitely put that fight on hold, whereas if Pacquiao had a really decent performance against Bradley and got the win, then it would have been really easy to make that Mayweather fight. But now we really have to have a commanding win for both fighters again before we make that fight to get the hype machine going again. But you never know. The money's right. Could happen. But I just think it's almost like a mandatory thing to heal the sport. You have to have this fight again. Unfortunately, that's the way the sport is designed right now. You can't turn back the clock. You can't do an appeal. So the only way to remedy it is have a rematch. And it's a shame they just don't make it mandatory, or Bradley will lose his belt. That would make the most sense to me. But doesn't sound like they're doing that. They just figured, oh, we'll have five judges score it, and it will mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Another little boxing story here. David Haye versus Derek Chisora is going to get an American TV deal. Epix Network is going to be showing that grudge match. It's both of these guys suspended over their little bar brawl after the Klitschko fight. And they can't do business in British territory. I think they're having like the Luxembourg or some other municipality sanction the fight. And now they're getting an American TV deal. Who's going to watch that fight? But I don't have Epix. I don't know if it's that popular of a TV station, but let's see. I can't get the story to come up for some reason. Anybody, what we got this weekend for boxing? Anything big?
I actually did take a look on the Olympic realm. Isn't any fight on, but there is a one interesting fight. This is supposed to be the match between Victor Ortiz and Andre Berto. Berto, another one with the guy suspended. So they brought in a fighter by the name of Francisco Lopez. 29-4, 17 knockouts. Lost his last fight to a undefeated fighter by split decision by the name of Jesse Vargas. And he lost that literally by 1 point. So we got a guy named Patrick Lopez, who I've covered, beat Lopez. His only losses, he has a unanimous decision in his third fight that he lost. A split decision to a guy that was 12-1-1. A majority decision to a guy that was 23-3, and then his last fight, a decision to Jesse Vargas. Now, he's stepping in fighting Victor Ortiz. Victor Ortiz is 29-22, 40-2, 28-9. Two of his losses have come by stopping. If he wins this fight, he would be penciled in for Saul Canelo Alvarez. I was talking to my dad about him. I was like, for him to strike, he's going to lose his fight. Alvarez.
Yeah, another interesting boxing story I heard this week. Kind of flew under the radar, but Evander Holyfield's back in the news for all the wrong reasons. He owes over $300,000 worth of child support to one of his kids. And he could go to jail over it. And I guess, you know, he's one of those religious fanatics. And, you know, he had one of those one of those careers where every fight, after the fight, he'd always be thanking God and, you know, talking about scripture, all that. And I guess he really believes in God's advice to Adam and Eve to replenish the earth. He's got a ton of kids. And he owes child support to all of them, I guess. But one of them in Georgia is so far behind that the Child Services Department is threatening to lock Holyfield up if he doesn't pay. And he just sold one of his mansions down there in Atlanta. And he sold it for $7.5 million, but he owed $14 million on it. So he's in a big hole, a big way, and nobody's calling. I was going to do a story myself on this, and I kind of did a search for news on Evander Holyfield. And he's got no prospects for fights, and he's about to turn 50. So he's definitely going to have a hard time paying that $300,000 and paying back that $7.5 million that he lost on the house. Oh, poor Evander. Hopefully he turns it around. He's going to have to do a Mike Tyson expose tour of Broadway and Vegas, I guess. Money back. But I guess that's it for us. I want to give a big shout-out to millifidel.com and drinkcocaine.com. Thanks, guys, for stopping by tonight for the short show. And we'll have a nice guest or two maybe next week. And we'll take this up again then. Talk about the big
UFC
fights. Have a good night.
Okay.